Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Melanie Summer, sitting in today for Catherine Lanfer. America's school children usually land in the middle of the pack when they're compared to the performance of children from other countries. Some education experts say one reason is because American students don't spend as much time in school as students in other countries. Calls for longer school days and longer school years are now being made in New York, California, and many other communities around the country. Leading the effort is the Century Foundation, a public policy research group based in Washington. The foundation is calling for longer hours in each school day and more days in each school year. We're talking this morning with Rui Teixeira, who is a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, about whether extending the school calendar is a good idea. Mr. Teixeira, thanks for being with us this morning.
Glad to be here.
Well, you say that the traditional school calendar we have now has outlived its usefulness. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you look back at the origins of the 9-to-3 school day and the 9-month school year, it really lies in the sort of agrarian calendar of the United States of 100 or more years ago, when kids needed to be out in the middle of the afternoon to help with the crops and needed to be around during the summer to help with the most intensive part of the agricultural year. And hey, let's face it, that isn't the U.S. anymore. And as you pointed out, we're expecting more and more of our students in an educational sense. We believe they need higher levels of skills to be able to compete and prosper in this sort of information-based economy and do as well as students in other countries. And I think in addition to that, we have all the pressures on working families today, where typically two parents work, maybe full-time, and you have to deal with the issues of what do you do with the kids after 3 o'clock during the week? What do you do with them during the summer? And I think there's a great deal to be said at this point for starting to experiment with the school calendar and keeping schools open more hours and having more open more months of the year. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing today. Reality is kind of catching up with the school calendar.
But we've made the school calendar work pretty well, haven't we, over the last couple hundred years?
Well, I think it's been serviceable, but I think its adequacy is at this point really being called into question. I think if we want to accomplish those two goals I just mentioned, of both being able to provide sort of a more fertile ground for educational achievement and to take pressure off of working families, I think this is the direction we need to move, and the current situation just isn't adequate to it. And despite the fact that we've had it for 100 or 200 years, doesn't necessarily mean that we should stick with it just because it's been around for a long time.
So what is the Century Foundation specifically recommending?
Well, what we're recommending, I think, is is experimentation and a move toward what I think of as the core concept of the whole thing, which is let's keep schools open all day, 9-to-6 or something like that, and let's keep them open year-round. Now, that leaves a lot of things unspecified. Is that extra time during the school day going to be voluntary or mandatory? Is the program going to be universal or targeted to low-income children? Are we going to have more mandatory days in the school year or just keep the schools open during the summer for educational enrichment activities? There's a lot of different ways that you can do this, but I think the core concept is let's keep the schools open and utilized to their maximum throughout the school, the work day, and throughout the year. And I think that's what we need to move toward. And I think that let 100 flowers bloom within that context.
We should probably define terms a little more specifically. When we use the term year-round schooling, what does that mean?
Okay, well, that part of the problem here is it is a little bit ambiguous. When I say all-year schools or year-round schooling, I just mean it in the generic, broad sense of keeping the school building open and have educational activities available for everyone during that time. Year-round schooling means other things in other contexts. For example, in California and Texas, where year-round schooling is probably considered most common in the United States, the typical form it takes there is not to have kids go to school any more days than they did before, which is about 180, but to have them go to school throughout the year, but with vacations broken up in different ways. So there's no longer a long 3-month summer vacation. Instead, it's like 6 weeks on, 2 weeks off, 6 weeks on, 2 weeks off, something like that. There are different schedules throughout the year. So that's another way people talk about year-round schooling, but that's somewhat different than the broad and generic sense in which I'm using the term.
Well, let's talk a little bit, in particular, let's start with the notion of all-day schooling, of having the school building open from 8 in the morning until 6 at night, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various options, as you say, of having the kids, all of the children, be in classes for that whole time,
mm-hmm.
or potentially having the same sort of schedule they do now for regular classes, and then have some other options for the extra 3 hours at the end of the day.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit more about what some of those would be and what are the advantages to that?
Sure. Well, I think where we see most commonly now see an extended school day in the sense that everybody has to be there from, say, like 9 to 5. I think a fair amount of charter schools are now experimenting with this, particularly in sort of low-income and disadvantaged communities, where the theory is that these kids don't just need the option of going to school for those additional hours. They need to be there for the additional hours. So I think in some of those contexts, we're seeing some of that kind of scheduling. I think more broadly, the movement we see is toward a situation where you have core school hours where kids have to be there, the mandatory part of the school day, say from 9 to 3, and then from 3 to 6, you have a broad range of educational enrichment activities available. I mean, you might have everything from art and music and dance on the one hand to additional math and reading classes and other more academic subjects, particularly for those people those kids who feel they need or it is felt that they need additional sort of academic background and preparation in those subjects. So a lot of different purposes can be fulfilled by having these additional 3 hours available during the day. And then, of course, the other side of that is while those kids are at school doing those educational enrichment activities, you don't have parents having to scramble around just to find somebody to supervise their children during those 3 hours. Instead, the kids are actually somewhere doing something that's actually of some intrinsic value.
And then let's talk a little bit about the concept of keeping school buildings open and available and offering programs throughout the school year, throughout the entire year, I should mm-hmm. say, the calendar year. Again, talk about some of the options that might be considered in that way.
Well, I think, again, sort of the range of options that could be considered is sort of only limited by the imagination and the needs of different communities. I think the nice thing about that, this concept is it can be adapted to the specific needs of the specific type of community you're talking about. For example, one thing that research has shown pretty definitively is that the problem of summer learning loss is the worst in low-income and disadvantaged communities. So I think in those communities, you might want to make the kinds of classes available during the summer more academically oriented and really designed to keep students going in core areas like math and English and so on. And in other communities, you might have more of a mix between straight educational stuff and things that we think of as more extracurricular or enrichment activities. So right now, there's actually a big problem with the availability of summer school in low-income communities. Frequently, it's just targeted to kids who are failing. It's bound up with this movement to stop social promotion and so on. I think a useful approach to that is really make summer school, in that sense, available for everybody, particularly in these disadvantaged communities, because we do have this problem of the gap in achievement between low-income minority students, for example, and other students really widening over the course of the summer. Let's keep the schools open during the summer in those communities every summer, and let's make a particular effort to make these kind of academic classes available so that people can continue their education in those subjects and not experience such learning loss during the summer months. So, but again, I think the kind of options and the way they'd be configured is really going to be dependent on the needs of the individual community, and that's one of the great things about this. It can be done in so many different ways.
Our guest this morning is Rui Teixeira, a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, which is a public policy research group based in Washington, D.C. And the Century Foundation has come out with a series of proposals and recommendations and is trying to foster more discussion about the notion of extending our school calendar, having children available or able to stay in school all day long from 8 in the morning until 6 o'clock at night, and extending this the school year so that school buildings and school programs are available year-round. We're wondering if you think that's a good idea. Is it important for you to have your students, your children in school more hours during the day or more days during the year? Is that a good way to improve their academic performance? 651-227-6000 is the number in the Twin Cities to call, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you're listening is 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Do you think this is a good idea? Do you think your students already spend enough time in school and should have that summer vacation time off from school? We hope that you'll join our conversation here on Mid-Morning. I'm Melanie Summers sitting in today for Catherine Lanfer. Rita Shira, we have had lots of conversations about this sort of idea, extending the school calendar for many, many years, particularly when we come out or hear these reports comparing the performance of American school children to those in other countries where typically the school calendars are longer. Do you sense a greater interest in looking at these sorts of ideas right now, and why would that be?
Yeah, I do sense more interest in looking at them. It's clear from, for example, the recent statements of a number of governors of important states like Governor Pataki in New York and Governor Davis in California that people are putting increasing emphasis on looking into programs of this nature. Gray Davis, for example, proposed that students actually go to school for another 30 days during the year, middle school students in particular is what he's starting out with, so you'd have a school year of 210 days. Pataki has suggested that school buildings be open, you know, until after dark and that kids actually be there. I mean, it was a little ambiguous what he was saying. Was he saying they had to be there or they should be able to be there? Again, that's a discussion we'll be having, I think. But we see this increased interest in public officials in terms of raising this issue. We just see more kids throughout the country going to schools that are either all day or all year or both. I mean, it's very difficult at this point to get reliable data on exactly what the appropriate figure is, but everybody agrees that it's going up and going up fast. The federal government just a few years ago allocated only $1 million to after-school programs. Now they allocate more like $1 billion. So I think this is clearly sort of a burgeoning sort of policy idea in the country, and there's a sort of rapidly increasing number of students who are caught up in this in one way or another, and we see a lot of experiments in different kinds of the country doing it in different ways. And I think it basically responds to the two imperatives. On the one hand, the sense that kids need to learn more, they need to meet higher standards, and on the other hand, that there's a real need to make school interact with the calendars and the schedules of working families in such a way that it doesn't create these extremely difficult scheduling problems for them, a sense that there should be a way for the school system and families to work together in a way that's much more much easier on everybody. And I think that's really the impetus behind this, is it fills two needs and fills them so well to move in this direction that I think it's just the kind of thing, if people start thinking about it, politicians start thinking about it, parents start thinking about it, it's sort of, well, yeah, why not? Why not do this? Why not give it a try? I mean, it seems to make perfect sense.
Except it would cost a heck of a lot of money, though.
Right, well, that's what I was about to say.
Yeah, a lot of...
Because it's a good idea doesn't mean, you know, it's not going to be expensive. If we did want to extend this kind of all-day, all-year schooling to the entire country, there's no question it would cost a serious chunk of change.
For more staff, potentially,
yeah,
for more
have
buildings?
More staff. I mean, there would be a certain amount of additional maintenance and so on that would be required for the school buildings. It would just flat out be expensive. But the good news in terms of dealing with the expense is that a couple of things have changed in the United States in the last 5 years that would lead us to perhaps believe that it was affordable. One is that in terms of budget situations and in terms of economic growth, things have obviously changed quite a bit. We've gone from a period of budget deficits to a period of budget surpluses, and it looks like the long-range growth rate of the economy may actually have changed quite substantially. And when the growth rate of the economy improves, it means there's more resources available for government programs such as this one. The other fact, not unimportant, is that the attitude of the public towards spending in particular, public spending in particular, and public spending on education has really changed quite dramatically. You used to have a situation where sort of spending was guilty until proven innocent. And I think now we're moving into a situation where there's just a great deal more public openness to spending, is particularly, again, in an area like education. There was an interesting story in the Wall Street Journal the other day where the reporter basically analyzed some of the initiatives and referenda that have been passed about schools and looked at some of the public opinion data and concluded that that period of hostility toward public spending and toward strong interest in tax cuts has really kind of come to an end. Going back to the tax revolts of the late 70s, we're now in the early 2000s, and it appears that in the sort of the battle over spending and taxes that has taken place since then, the parents have kind of won. And now it's becoming sort of the common sense of most states that there has to be a great deal more investment in education, and that there's actual useful things that the government can do in that respect. So I think that it may take a while for us to implement a system like this and to make it anything close to universal, but I think we may have both the fiscal and political wherewithal to make it happen.
We have Hans on the line from Maplewood who would like to join the conversation. Good morning, Hans.
Hi. I'd like to make a question regarding some of these other schools in other countries that we've lagged behind for as long as I remember, and I'm almost 40. But the other thing too that you seem to be kind of positioning this politically, and it seems as though you're kind of looking for all day daycare. And I think part of being a kid, I know when I grew up on a farm and we did a lot of work in the summer still. And I mean, part of being a kid is, gosh, I've got 3 months off. I can just play with my friends and stuff like that. And I kind of look at this kind of movement as the spoiled baby boomers moving through life. You know, they've just gotten a little bit better at positioning these things. And isn't the real fact that the baby boomers want to, basically get a little bit cheaper daycare? And also, you use the term low-income disadvantaged, which, now has kind of become the term for inner-city black kids. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, the wealthy suburbanite kids whose mom and dads like to go on vacation for the summer, they can, take time off, and those kids might not be applied, but let's get these low-income inner-city kids who tend to maybe get more in trouble in the summer, let's get them locked up in the schoolhouses. So if I could just get some feedback, I'd appreciate it.
All right. Thanks very much for the questions, Hans.
Well, I think the caller raises a number of important issues. I think one thing we will hear a lot about is this idea gets batted around more, is I think some people will more or less take the position that this is just a fancy way of getting free daycare. It doesn't really have anything to do with educational achievement or enrichment, and I guess in its more extreme form, such as the caller was alluding to, people will argue it's a bunch of spoiled baby boomers who just want to be able to kind of game the system to get some of this free daycare. And I guess I do believe that that's a bit unfair. I do think that the educational utility of keeping the schools open for more hours and more days of the year, I think is pretty easy to make a plausible argument for. And contrary to the thing about sort of affluent baby boomers, it's particularly going to be the case and particularly useful and particularly important for people who are having the most difficulty in school and are in most danger of being left behind. And I think there's a sort of a research consensus about that. And I certainly think that we shouldn't think of it as trying to lock inner city kids up for the summer or for the day. I think that as far as we have moved down this path and implemented these kinds of programs in low-income communities, which I might add aren't just in cities. I mean, most poor people live in the suburbs, and a lot of them are not black but are white or Hispanic. That's where we've seen some of the greatest success and where there's the greatest level of parental support. I mean, people really need these programs, use these programs, and find them extremely valuable for themselves and for their children. So, I do think it's a mistake to look at it as a way of, on the one hand, indulging baby boomers, and on the other hand, of sort of fencing in poor people. I think the uses of this are are much more sort of salubrious than the caller alludes to.
Our next caller is Mary from St. Paul. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. I'm Mary Schrankler, and I'm a former school principal in North St. Paul, Maplewood. I want to commend you for addressing this issue, which surfaces so often. In my way of thinking and in my past experience, we put the best interests of children first, and it is in the best interest of children that we prolong the school year.
Why is that, Mary? Why do you think it's in the best interest of the children?
Well, from my own experience, we had children show up at school after the first week of vacation. We are a world-class country, and if we look at other world-class countries, their calendar is much longer than ours. I don't think it's healthy for children to be on vacation for 3 months. I also know that the best-kept secret in this country is the number of children that are home alone for 3 months. Those are some of the reasons.
Mm-hmm. And do you what would you like to see if we have longer school days or longer school years? What should we teach those children? What sorts of activities would they benefit from, do you think, in that extra time?
I think it would be very important to change the curriculum to more hands-on, stimulating kinds of experiences. I think we could have just morning school because of the importance of the climate in Minnesota for children to be off. I think there are so many wonderful options for enrichment of every child and some remediation, which we do now.
All right, Mary. Thank you so much for the call.
You're welcome.
Mr. Tashira, what do you say to Mary?
Oh, well, I think Mary's obviously right on track. I mean, I agree entirely with her perspective, and I think she's got exactly the right attitude. I mean, there's just so many ways in which we can experiment with this that would make sense and that might provide useful opportunities for children that I think when you start thinking about it, it really, like I say, just makes common sense that we should move in this direction, and it's silly not to. So I'm hoping that we will, and maybe people like Mary will help spread the word.
All right. Next is James from St. Paul. Good morning, James.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
My wife and I support these theories wonderfully. Our son, 2 years ago, they opened a new school in a different district, and my son attended. They got a grant for extended day, year-round calendar. My wife and I supported it. However, the second year, the funding was pulled. It was a test project. They were going to see how these students were doing, and there was no funding, and now we're back to the same schedule as every other school. And my concern is, where is the funding going to come from, and will it stay?
Can I just ask you a question?
Yes.
When your son was in that school, what was your reaction? How did he like it? How did you like it?
Absolutely wonderful. We support it 100%. He's still attending the school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gave us an opportunity. The first year that he was there, there was extended math, extended science hours. They had a second language taught. And now, because of the tight schedule, you know, he gets 11 minutes for lunch. There's no second language. It doesn't seem as productive to me, and everything's cramped in. And they also had some issues with the teacher contracts and trying to extend teacher contracts to run out through the extended day.
All right.
And I'm just calling for some comments, not a specific question.
Great. Thank you very much for the call,
thank
James.
Thank you.
The funding was his major point, although obviously he James said that was a good experience for his son. But Rui Tashira, the money, you know, we've talked about it's going to be expensive, but it could be billions, couldn't it?
Absolutely, billions. But this is a big country. And I do think the caller's comments point to one of the emerging realities of this sort of movement is that the problem very rarely seems to come from where they try this, that parents don't like this or kids don't like this. I mean, generally it meets with a very positive reaction. People just think it fills all kinds of needs and they love it. The problems do arise, however, when for whatever reason the money is short-term and the money doesn't reappear or somehow gets cut. And I think that This is really going to be the nub of it, finding the proper funding to keep up with what I think will be emerging demand for this kind of these kinds of services and these kinds of opportunities. But we may be talking about billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars over periods of time. But you know, again, this is a big country. We have a lot of resources at our disposal. And, you know, the federal government, for example, now contributes only 7% of the dollars spent on education in this country. There's no reason in the world why the federal government couldn't contribute a larger share. And at this point, it appears that we have the money available to do it. And I think right now they are already talking in Congress about substantially increasing the federal commitment to education. I'm not saying the federal government, should have to or would provide all the money along these lines, but I think they could certainly play a role in jump-starting this process and providing matching funds and doing things like that, and I think that may ultimately be necessary.
We are talking this morning with Rui Teixeira. He's a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, a public policy research group based in Washington. The Century Foundation is a very big player in the debate over whether or not our school calendar should be extended with longer school days every day and more days that the school is in session during the school year, potentially having school buildings open year-round. Obviously, there are lots of concerns about where that the support will come for doing that, whether or not we should move away from our current calendar, which is sort of based on the old agricultural calendar. What are your comments and thoughts? Do you think this is a good idea? Do you have concerns about whether or not children should be in school that long? 651-227-6000 is the Twin Cities telephone number for you to call and join in. 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Melanie Summer, sitting in today for Catherine Lanfer, and we'll return to our conversation in just a few moments after we check in on the latest news from Stephen John.
Thank you, Melanie. Last year saw the biggest jump in wholesale prices in a decade. The government says the producer price index rose by 3.6%. The December report, meanwhile, shows the impact of higher natural gas prices. They were up nearly 7% for the month, but wholesale prices overall were unchanged. The sign that read Time Warner outside an office building in New York's Rockefeller Center has already been changed this morning with the letters AOL added. It's the first day of business for the new company following yesterday's final government approval of the big merger. A name change is coming for Dayton's stores. Target Corporation announced today it is changing the name of all of its high-end department stores to Marshall Fields. Industry analysts say the change likely reflects the popularity of the Marshall Fields name compared to the Dayton's and Hudson brands. A state senator says lowering the age required to hold elective office in Minnesota may encourage young people to get involved in politics. Senator Dave Kleiss of St. Cloud wants the age limit to change from 21 to 18. He wants to put a question on the ballot in 2002 to allow voters to determine whether to change the state's constitution and lower the age. The Elk River Reactor is named on a list of hundreds of sites nationally that did nuclear weapons work during the Cold War. The government named the Central Minnesota site in an attempt to identify workers nationwide who may qualify for compensation because they were made sick by their jobs. Minneapolis seems to be getting safer. Reports of serious crime in Minneapolis fell 11% in 2000, dropping to a level not seen since the late 1960s. Homicide was the only serious crime to climb from 47 in 1999 to 50 last year. Winter weather advisory for the Northeast this morning. Dense fog advisory for portions of the Northwest, East Central, and Southeast this morning. Temperatures should range from the mid-20s Northwest to the mid-30s in the East and South. 28 degrees now in the Twin Cities. That's news from Minnesota Public Radio.
Just a reminder that Minnesota Public Radio relies on listeners to help pay our operating expenses. Thanks to all of you who recently made a contribution because your membership does matter. Today's programming is sponsored in part by Karen and O.J. Fawcett in celebration of their grandson Cole's third birthday.
This week, a Prairie Home Companion is live from the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul with an important event for those of you of a certain age, a reunion of Commander Cody and his original Lost Planet Airmen. Back from the ozone, out on the airwaves. Butch Thompson is with us on the piano, Rich Dvorsky, the shoe band, the latest news from Lake Wobegon, and lots more coming up this week.
Saturday afternoon at 5 and Sunday at noon on Minnesota Public Radio. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Melanie Summers, sitting in today for Catherine Lanfer. We would like to remind you that Midday is coming up just after the news at 11 this morning. Gary Eichten will be in talking with State Senator Dick Day about his proposals for traffic management in the Twin Cities and beyond. His latest proposal is to get rid of SANE lanes, an experiment in that direction. So we'll hear about transportation priorities coming up after the news at 11 on Midday. Right now, we're continuing our conversation with our guest, Rui Teixeira, a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, which is a public policy research group in Washington, D.C., and we're talking about the school calendar, whether or not the school days should be extended, whether or not school years should be extended, whether or not our students should be in school longer and learn more and perform better on the performance test as compared to other students in other countries. We're wondering what you have to say at 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Rui Teixeira, we are back, and let me just ask you another question, first of all, about funding before we move along to our next caller. I guess, you know, we alluded to the fact that there's a lot of, you know, potential money out there, but what do you think it's going to take to get the financial backing that this sort of endeavor will require?
Well, I think what it's going to take is for the idea to catch on somewhat more than it already has. I think already you have you know, a lot of people talking about it. I think where it's being implemented in more and more communities and where it is being implemented, you see a lot of support. People like it, but it hasn't really been nationalized as an issue. It hasn't become a big part of either political party's program. And I think once it gets to the somewhere near the top of the agenda, I think the public reaction is going to be very warm indeed. And I think if we do that, we may see things change even more rapidly than they are now. If you look back on the 2000 campaign, for example, Bush didn't really talk about this issue at all, as far as I could figure out. Gore talked a little bit about after-school programs and the need to provide some enhanced funding for them. But I think it's fair to say it wasn't really a big part of his program, and he didn't, you know, wasn't one of the things people carried away from the campaign that he wanted to do. It was just one of many things he said he was interested in. So I think that for this to really get going and ultimately generate the sort of support that I think would lead to the sort of funding these changes need, I think it needs to get a bit closer to the top of the agenda. And I think that we'll just have to see how long that takes. I just think the more we see it in communities and the more experimentation there is and the more positive reaction there is, I think things will sort of percolate upward. I think this is going to be one of those things that perhaps needs to reach a critical mass at the grassroots and then the states, and then it'll really hit the national agenda, and then that'll really ratchet up the speed at which this issue is addressed. But, and that's all speculative, but that's the way I expect it will probably happen.
All right. Our next caller is Frank from Maplewood. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Go ahead, please.
I'm actually a principal of an elementary year-round school.
Oh.
We are a voluntary integration site, so we pull students from one urban community and two suburban communities. And one of the things that we have found out consistently over and over again from our families is that when they compare the traditional calendar that their children were on to the year-round calendar that we have at our school, that it makes much more sense for their children to be in a year-round school. That some of the comments that we've heard over and over again with some of our focus groups that we've had with families is that once the summer begins, 2 weeks into the summer, their kids are ready to go back to school. I mean, you know, the excitement is really not there the way it was at the, you know, toward the end of the school year. Around 2 to 2.5 weeks, students are, some of the children are not really sure what to do. And so what we have found is that our 45 days on and our 15 days off really provides students, and this is what we hear from our parents, about just the amount of time that they need to gear back up to come back to school. And it really, for us, has created kind of a seamless transition for our students also. that one of the things that makes us a little different is during those breaks that we have, students can come to school 8 additional days, 3 times out of the 4 breaks. And so we can have students that come up, come to school up to 200 days a year. And we have found that the time on task, when they have more time on task, they are doing better in their classes. Their teachers are seeing improvements. Their parents say that they're seeing improvements, when students are going home and doing their homework at home. And they say it just makes sense. And even as our society has changed and we don't have the agricultural responsibility that we've had before, I think it just makes sense that kids should go to school year-round. And so that's why we're very much in support of year-round schools. And we hear over and over again from our families, both from our urban families and from our suburban families, that they were delighted to hear that they had a choice for their child to go to year-round school because it just made more sense for them, and they've seen the benefits from it.
Frank, did you say, are you an elementary school?
We're a K-6 elementary school located in Maplewood, and I don't even know if it's appropriate to say the name of the school or not.
If you wish, that's
yes.
No problem.
Yeah, we're called the Tri-District Community Cultures Environmental Science Magnet School, and we're a voluntary integration school where we pull students from the urban and suburban communities.
Right.
And we made year-round school part of our educational plan, so it wasn't something that we thought, oh, let's just try this and see how it works, or it wasn't a pilot program. We said that this is good for kids.
But then what happens to those kids when they get to junior high and high school and they're back on the regular schedule? Do you think that's going to be problematic for them?
You know what? Fortunately, we have a middle school that's year-round, so that those students who attend our school do have the option to continue with the middle school with that same year-round concept. We have had some students who have gone to traditional calendars, and from the feedback that we've gotten, and of course we need to get much more feedback than we have now, is that they missed a year-round school. It is a transition for them, and that we need to support our students in making that transition. And so As the word gets out that this is a good thing, this is really good for kids, and more school districts look at having that year-round schedule as a choice for families, I think we're going to find that a student who begins in kindergarten and graduates as a senior should have a choice and should have the option of attending a year-round school all the years of their K-12 education. And I just think it's going to take more awareness, more programs like this particular one, and more families telling other families and other school district officials that this is really great for their family and for their children in particular.
Frank, we're going to let you go, but thank you so much for the telephone call this morning. Rui Tashira, you've got a fan right there.
Yes, well, I was very interested to hear what Frank had to say. And a couple of things he said that really struck me as being so consistent with what research we've been able to do on this issue so far. One is the high level of satisfaction he reports on the part of parents with these programs. I mean, that's pretty consistent result we've gotten in a lot of different places. People are just very, very happy to have this option and to use it. The second thing is that he talked about keeping the schools open during the sort of intersession breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, is consistent with research that programs that are year-round, but not only are year-round in terms of being different from the traditional calendar, but also when the kids are on break, they keep the schools open for sort of educational enrichment activities and whatever. Those are the schools that do the best in terms of results, in terms of achievement, and so on. The way that, in particular, they've configured their approach is consistent with what we seem to be the best practices about year-round schooling.
Our next caller is Jan from Edina. Good morning, Jan.
Are you there?
Yes.
Mr. Tashira, I'm calling because in principle I agree with what you say, but I think your recommendations are based on an assumption that schools are a healthy place for all kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that question is, that assumption is questionable, particularly kids that are experiencing bullying and harassment in the school, kids with undiagnosed learning disabilities, and kids with non-traditional learning styles. I think for these kids, school can be a very unhealthy place for them to be from a mental health perspective. Do you have any comments on that?
Gee, I guess I hadn't really thought about that one in particular. I also wasn't 100% sure I understand what you were projecting to be the alternative. Do you mean that basically it's not so much all year schooling versus regular school, like you're saying they're just kids who shouldn't be in school at all and should be homeschooled? Is that the flavor
Not at all. I'm saying that there are children, if you look at the literature, bullying is a really common problem in public and private schools,
mm-hmm.
and has really significant mental health ramifications for children. I know of children that the least healthy place for them to be is in school because mm-hmm. of what's going on there.
So it's bad enough they're bullied for 9 months a year. You don't want them bullied for 12 months.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, in principle, I agree with what you're saying, but if the system isn't, the school, public school and probably the private school systems don't have the resources to assure that
mm-hmm.
schools are healthy places for kids from a mental health perspective, I don't know that it's really such a good thing to put kids in a situation that isn't good for them for longer periods
mm-hmm.
of time.
Right. Yes.
Thanks
well,
for the call, Jan. Go ahead.
Actually, you know, I think that the core concept here about the all-day, all-year schools would potentially is consistent with what the caller would favor, which is that if we're talking about schools not being open in a mandatory sense, much more than they are now, and that the rest of the time the schools are open for different types of activities, some of which are sort of educational in a standard academic sense, but other times, but there's other kinds of activities that are available. I think that the kinds of kids the caller is talking about could potentially have access to programs that might help them with these kinds of problems, because the school would be open for business during those after-school hours. So instead of having the kid be bullied for 9 hours instead of 6 hours a day, perhaps for those additional 3 hours, the kid could get some help that maybe now they're not getting.
Mm-hmm. Rui Teixeira is our guest, a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, which is a public policy research group based in Washington, D.C. And the Century Foundation is promoting the notion of expanding the school calendar, the school year as well as school days, offering more hours of opportunity for structured or less structured learning on the part of our children. We're wondering if you think that year-round schooling or extended day schooling is a good idea for your child or for others. 651-227-6000 here in the Twin Cities. Anywhere else you're listening, it's 1-800-242-2828. I'm Melanie Summers, sitting in today for Catherine Lanfer, and you're listening to Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. Our next caller is Paul from Minneapolis. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, and I'd like to thank Mr. DeShira's time and his comments. Certainly his proposals are bold. I am a teacher, and I taught for a number of years abroad in different countries, and like Korea and Hungary, and a lot of them do have year-round schedules. And I do think that they are very good in principle and in theory, however, and for the children, of course. However, my concern is how it would affect the quality of teaching,
mm-hmm.
because teachers certainly need time off. They burn out. I burned out. You need time to regroup, rethink things. And I'm wondering if it would actually, push people away from the teaching profession, because now they're not going to be able to get off, early. They're going to have to stay in school longer. They won't have summers off. And it's putting a lot more, strain on them. So do you think that it would repel teachers from entering the workforce, or do you think that there's a way of compensating that sacrifice?
Yes. Well, I think I have a couple of comments on that. The first one would be that I think that the way a lot of this all-day, all-year schooling would be configured would be in such a way that it would really require not just teachers to cover extra hours, the teachers we currently have, but I think you'd have to have additional staff that would provide some of these additional classes that we're talking about. I mean, I think clearly you're talking about expanding the teaching workforce. So I think in that sense, it's not clear. Teachers might have their schedules organized differently, but not so differently that it amounts to a huge amount more work than they currently put in. I think the second aspect of this is that if you go to a year-round schedule, and it's teachers are viewed as being involved in this year-round activity, I think it actually might become easier for us to fund teacher salaries on the level that I personally think they probably need to be funded to attract the kind of professional workforce that you really need to have if teaching is going to be effective, and we're just going to have the supply of quality teachers that we really need. I think it's going to be easier to interest the public in paying the relatively high salaries that teachers should really be getting if they see teaching as a full-time, full-year professional activity, which obviously reconfiguring schools in this sense would contribute to. So I think that at the end of the day, it might actually make it easier, not harder, to bring teachers into the teaching profession, because I think it would create a political climate where we could reward teachers at a higher level and make them, in the public eye, appear to be real full-time, full-year professionals.
There certainly is a problem and concern about a teacher shortage. We just had a report yesterday in Minnesota which said that many of the superintendents around the state are having problems recruiting teachers as it is, and this new proposal would certainly require quite a bit more staffing.
Yes, exactly. The teacher shortage issue is a very important issue. It has to be addressed, and not only because of this, because of initiatives toward small class size, because of initiatives toward more universal preschool. All of these things require more staff, and to get the kind of staff we need and to get good staff that we need, you're talking about, it's a simple supply and demand. If you're going to attract those kinds of the people you need in today's labor market, among other things, you're going to have to pay them more money and maybe make the requirements for sort of who can be a teacher, the requirements for that, and the training, both to be more flexible in some ways and also more rigorous in some ways. The huge issue, the Century Foundation actually has an idea brief that I helped co-author on our website that deals with this issue of expanding the supply of quality teachers, but I quite agree that this issue of all-day, all-year schools and the issue of expanding the supply of quality teachers are sort of inextricably interlinked. It's going to be hard to do one without dealing with the other.
Our next caller is Anna May from St. Paul. Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I go to Crasslands Middle School. It's in St. Paul right now, and it's year-round.
Mm-hmm. How old are you, Anna May?
I'm 14 years old.
Okay.
And I think year-round school is great because it helps, because a lot of times in summer, kids forget what they're doing in school, and it can help them remember what's going on and we go to school for 9 weeks, and we get 3 weeks off. During that, one of those weeks, we go to intercession, which is out at Wilder Forest. And we go out and we do lots of things out there that have to do with our school. We have an arts and science. That's the theme of our school. And we do lots of arts and science things here at Crasslands. And I just think it's a really good idea.
And do you feel like you get opportunities to learn more things than you would with a traditional schedule, do you think?
I think we do, because we are in the summer and there's different opportunities to do.
All right. Well, I appreciate your calling. Thanks so much, Anna May.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm happy to hear that Anna May is happy with the year-round schedule she has. Again, that's pretty consistent with what we know about how people, kids and parents, both tend to react to these kinds of changes. And her comment about forgetting things in the summer is really very apropos. I mean, very, very strong research findings suggest that there's a tremendous amount of learning loss that takes place in the summer, that it's much worse for low-income students. But just in general, teachers might spend as much as 4 weeks at the beginning of the subsequent year just teaching what kids forgot over the extended summer break. So, again, this is just a kind of a scheduling construction that's outlived its usefulness. And do kids really need 3 months off in the summer? Probably not. We really think about it and really honest with ourselves.
All right, we have Mary Ellen from Minneapolis on the line next. Mary Ellen?
Yes, I have two comments.
Yes.
One is, some people have children because they enjoy being with them, and that's what they would like to do. And I think parents should have that right also. But I think if part of what they pay taxes for is to pay for children to go to school year-round, for those parents who would rather not be home with their children and be their teachers and what have you, then some of this money should go to at-home parents. That's one point. And the other is, I think we're talking about getting more and more people involved with children, and we have to look at pay. And I agree with the person who talked about the bullies. I've had one whole neighborhood kept their children home because the school did not deal with their after-school program in terms of kids being bullied. And after about a month of them all staying home, taking turns with the neighborhood kids, it finally got settled. Mm-hmm. But we don't want flexible standards. We wouldn't want them for our doctors, our lawyers, our nurses, the people that are involved with humans in other situations. And until we're ready to train people, I think somebody needs to look at what kind of training are we going to require for all these people that are going to provide all these extra things. And those are my two comments.
Right.
Thank you for taking them.
Thank you very much for the call. I guess I'd like to go back to her first point, Rui Tashira, about, you know, parents who want to spend extended periods of time with their children after school or who are not working outside the home and have the opportunity to do that.
Well, I think, the sort of the core concept of this, and I would guess that this is how we'll wind up, it'll wind up evolving. I mean, it's not the case that all kids would have to be in school from 9 to 6, and all kids would have to be in school 12 months a year. It's more the case that I think that the core mandatory schedule that most children would be on would include, you know, a good chunk of time during the day like we have now, 9 to 3, 9 to 4, and would have, you know, maybe be 9 or 10 months of the year, depending on local desires. And you'd still have, for those parents who wish to organize things that way, they could still be with their kids from 3 to 6 if they don't want them to participate in any after-school education or enrichment activities. And if they want to take 2 months off during the summer and go somewhere or do whatever, they will probably continue to have that right, and maybe that's best for them. But I think for other parents and for other kids, they're going to want to be on a different kind of schedule for a variety of reasons. And I think with this more flexible arrangement we're talking about, those parents will be able to take advantage of those options. And I certainly hope we don't pitch it in terms of, well, there are people who care about their kids and want to spend time with them, and there are people who don't care about their kids and don't want to spend time with them, because I don't think that's the reality of it. I have kids myself, and even though I favor this all day, all year concept, it's not because I want to get rid of them.
I understand. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I'm afraid we're out of time.
Great. Well, I was delighted to be here.
All right. Rui Tashira is a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, which is a public policy research group based in Washington, D.C. We'd like to remind you that if you've missed any mid-morning shows for the last week, you can find them online at minnesotapublicradio.org. Be sure to click the link for mid-morning. And you can also go there to continue to share your comments about this particular issue. We have a little page set up on the mid-morning homepage for you to register your comments or questions about this issue even after the show. And so we hope you'll go to minnesotapublicradio.org and then click the link for mid-morning. Mid-morning's thanks this week go to our assistant producer, Gabrielle Zuckerman. Randy Johnson is our technical director. We also had production help from Cliff Bentley.